Lisa.
Oh, so crazy. Oh, I'm so happy, though.
Wow. I know. She's such a hero.
Straight up evil. Leave the dog alone because the dog didn't do a damn thing, and now you're trying to feed him your bodily
Thou
fluid.
Thou shalt kill all of your
fans. Had a dog, fish, a tampon, and the garbage. It ain't right to bubble
you, but you can pretend like you will. A dog.
That was wow.
It's a survivor story.
So don't ever have Mary Vincent ever. They're so rare.
It's good. Okay?
It's a rarity. Lock your doors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Straight Up Evil. My name is Jocelyn. I'm the brunette. We've got Katie. She's the redhead.
Hello.
And we have Carly. She's the blonde.
Hiya.
It's a Carly case.
It's a Carly case.
So is it a kid?
No.
Is it okay? So it's not a kid. Does that mean we're gonna get a survivor, Carly?
Yes.
Yes.
It's not a kid. It's not an army woman.
It's not 20 children. it's not 10 yes. children dying.
Okay. That is awesome. We need one.
We needed it. We needed it so bad. However, even though it does have a happy ending, just a little trigger warning. Like, we obviously talk about murder, rape, physical abuse, sexual abuse, and also suicidal ideation. So it's still like a heavy,
dark.
It's a lot.
Dark.
But today we're talking about Lisa McVeigh Noland, who was 17 years old when she was abducted off of her bike on November 3rd, 1984. She would be repeatedly abused and raped by her kidnapper for 26 hours before she convinced him to let her go. And then she would help the authorities catch the guy.
Wow.
It's an amazing story. Yeah, it's amazing.
Mary Vincent. Lisa McVeigh, heroes.
Yep.
I will just, this entire episode, I'm going to be just saying like, oh my God, and I can't believe it, and how smart she is, because I was I'm in awe of how her mind worked. And I just.
Because she was so young.
Yes. And she did so many smart things that even with us doing all of these true crime stories, I still would not have thought of.
Would have thought of that. No. Yeah, yep. For sure. No.
But now I want to remember them. Okay, so Lisa McVeigh, she was born in March 1967, born and raised in Tampa, Florida. Don't know her parents' names. Basically, her family names are not released. Her family's terrible.
Really?
Treated her terribly. Her mom did have an alcohol and drug addiction, so it wasn't a great start. That would lead to her and Lisa sometimes living on the streets throughout Lisa's childhood. She had a really difficult childhood. Her mother started abusing Lisa by the age of 2, so really fucking terrible. And by the age of 5, she was in and out of foster care.
It's just so already. Hard to understand how you can be abusing a 2-year-old.
I
know.
You know? Like, exactly. I know it happens, but it's just...
We say this all the time. Like, if you don't want your child, when
plenty of people do,
there's other things that you can do besides treat them like absolute shit.
Garbage. Yeah.
Hurt
yeah.
them or kill them. Like,
there are services specifically to get exactly. them placed with where they're wanted, where exactly. they will be loved.
Seriously.
Exactly. So at 14, she's been in and out of foster care. Lisa's grandmother decides she's going to go live with her grandmother and her grandmother's boyfriend. Again, not sure of their names. I watched the like Lifetime movie of this story called Believe Me, The Abduction of Lisa McVeigh, which is actually pretty good. They have the names as Diane and Morris. I don't know if that's accurate. Either way, you're thinking like, oh, okay, great. She's out of the foster system. She's in with family members. It's going to be good. Nope. This would be actually way worse than living with her alcoholic mother. When Lisa moved in, she was moving in to quote unquote, like help take care of her grandmother or like help her grandmother around the house, like help her keep everything together. That's not what happened. Her grandmother actually was like, well, you're coming here to help us, but you're actually coming here because my boyfriend, who you're going to call dad in public, he's very interested in you. And we're going to teach you how to please a man. She's 14 years old. So she didn't even know what that meant at first. Like, had no idea what they're talking about. Sick. So in her grandmother's home, Lisa would suffer years of sexual and emotional abuse at the hands of her grandmother's boyfriend and essentially her grandmother too. So like, even though there's not like documented abuse by the grandmother, she was definitely neglected at the very least. The grandmother knew what was going on the entire time. So
that's abuse. Yep. That's abuse.
It is. Yeah. For the next 3 years, her grandmother's boyfriend would put a gun to her head as he molested her.
Jesus.
So obviously her home life was absolutely terrible. She would later call her teen years unbearable. She would therefore spend as little time at home as possible. She did have a job at Krispy Kreme donuts shop. So she would like to take shifts there. She went to school. I really don't see a lot about her having many friends. I'm not really sure what the situation was, but obviously her having moved, you know, so often with the foster care system,
it was hard to build relationships. Yes, yeah.
Like, who knows? And after dealing with so many years of trauma at age 17, Lisa decided that she just couldn't take it anymore and she wanted to end her life. So the night that before she would end up being abducted, she would write her suicide note and make her plan. She's 17, dude.
Like, and this exactly like this, literally, I'm not even kidding. Like literally just hearing like the beginning of this, like it tears me up because it's so heartbreaking.
It is.
To listen to like Quinny said, unbearable to hear that a 2-year-old is being abused, but it is even as heartbreaking to know that now that she's 17 years old and she's already been through this much. It literally tears me up. Like, yeah, because it's horrible.
Like how much can someone go through?
Shit is rough. Exactly.
Every like, single day of her life.
Right.
From all the people who are supposed to love and protect her.
Right. The closest people to
you. Now that she's 17, she's almost at the point where she can go out on her own.
Yeah. Right.
But like up to this point, there's nowhere for her to go. What's she supposed to do? It's all over the family. Everyone's just looking the other way.
Exactly.
It's so awful.
And it's interesting that you say that too, because she is so close to being 18 and like of age and being an adult, and she still can't push, like in her mind, she still can't push through to even get to that point. Like she's still just stuck. Too tired.
She's
still
stuck. Yeah. And obviously the family has some real health problems. Like they're obviously very sick in the mind. So
the night after making the decision to end her life and writing her suicide note, November 3rd, 1984, Lisa went to work as usual. She felt exhilarated that day now that she had her plan that after work, she was going to go home and shoot herself in the head. Like she had it all planned out. At the end of this day, when I get home, it's going to be over and I'm at peace with it. So Lisa had actually worked a double shift that day at Krispy Kreme. Wasn't what she normally did, but she picked up another shift, assumingly so she didn't have to be at home.
Right.
You know, like why would she want to be there? But working the double shift meant that she would get out of work at 2 o'clock in the morning. So she would actually ride her bike to and from work. So she was riding her bike home at 2 a.m.
Bad time.
That alone is so scary. It's scary to me. Her family doesn't care enough. And they just let her ride her bike home at 2 a.m. You know, like, holy shit. But she's riding her bike and she's thinking, wow, it's awfully dark down this road. But at the same time, she's realizing like this is the first time that she felt at peace while riding towards home. Because normally it's the last place she wants to be and she's usually filled with dread. So a coworker had actually offered her a ride home that night, but she declined because she wanted those few extra minutes of freedom before returning home. It's an 8-minute bike ride. She doesn't
want to be home.
It's an 8-minute bike ride. Like it's not, you know, so about halfway was a local church that Lisa always rode past. And that particular night, she noticed a maroon car that was parked in the middle of the parking lot. And she thought that was obviously strange, given it was 2 o'clock in the morning and she'd never seen a car there before. As she rode past the church, she was grabbed from behind. Lisa started screaming as loud as she could until her attacker put a gun to her head and said, "Shut up or I'll blow your brains out." And it was at this point that Lisa decided, you know what? I don't want to die. I'm going to do whatever it takes to survive this shit. Like, absolutely not. So she told her attacker, "I'll do whatever you want. Just don't kill me." The man with the gun would take Lisa, order her to undress. He tied her up. He blindfolded her. And as he blindfolded her, she literally had the amazing thought, I can't get over this, to tighten her face muscles so that when he blindfolded her and then she loosened her muscles, the cloth would be a little bit loose and not a set. Like, what?
She, because this has obviously been her life.
Her whole life. She has survivor had to survive mode. Every single day.
Straight survivor through mode.
The most crazy, heinous shit.
What a good idea. Remember
what
that.
What a good idea. I know. Yeah. I'm like,
and you have
shit.
To think, exactly. And you have to think too, because she's already had a lot of these preparations, like
yes,
from being abused by the grandpa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And her mother, you know.
Right.
And essentially her grandmother.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. Who knows about the fucking everybody. Homes, yeah. Who knows? So the man, again, like I said, he orders her to undress.
So he did this all in the, this is all in the car, like in the parking lot of the church, or that this is happening?
So I believe at this point, it is either in the car or right near the car. They do eventually get into the car.
So he just has her undress right in the, basically right next to the church, basically.
Yeah. Cause they're in a parking lot. No one's around. He asks her how old she is. She lies. She says 19. He leans her back and says, as long as you do whatever I want, I won't kill you. Forces her to perform oral sex on him. And Lisa's like, I've been sexually abused for 3 years. Like, what's one more time?
Okay. This poor girl.
Like, I know, it's heartbreaking.
This is what we're going to be saying the entire episode because it just never ends. But at the same time, she's also thinking, like, if I make it out of this alive, I will never let anyone do this to me again. Like, fuck this. So the man then throws her into his car. So yeah, this was outside. She's obviously, like I said, blindfolded, tied up. She couldn't see much, but because she had tightened her muscles and she's doing her best to search for any sort of clue that she can memorize that might save her life. She looks around the car. She's looking for any sort of identifying marks. And she does see that his car has white seats, a thick, dark red carpet.
Oh God.
And she sees the word Magnum on the dashboard. And she immediately associates this with Magnum PI, which is an old TV show, just for like something, just to make sure she remembers it. Like she just needs to associate it with something. And like we said, she already noticed when she was on her bike that it was a maroon car on the outside. So already she's gotten a pretty good amount of details already.
Right.
And she would later say that she used to watch a lot of crime shows, attributes that a little bit to all of these like smart ideas that she had. You know what I mean?
Hey.
Which like all of us.
Doing this work. Guy's so many red flags already though. Like the white seats, red carpet, Magnum gross. Sticker. Joking me?
It is not good. It is not good.
Ugh.
He's so gross. So the abductor starts driving them away and Lisa is tracking about how much time is passing. It ends up being like a 15-minute drive. She also somehow notes that they're driving north and I am so directionally challenged that like literally don't understand how you can notice that like at all, unless I'm going north on the Northway, like specifically, and it's all telling me it's just crazy. So at some point she's in the car. She also would take out her tampon and leave it there just so there would be evidence that she was there in case the police ever searched her car.
Wow.
Like who
the foresight
thinks of that? Exactly. I'd be too frozen in fear to have a credible thought, you know? So for the next 26 hours that she's with this man, he repeatedly rapes, tortures, and abuses her. And she was pretty much certain like she was going to die at any point, but she didn't. It's a survivor story. Let's not forget this. So the car, after about 15 minutes, the car stops and the man makes Lisa get out. And from under her blindfold, she can see that there are some woods in the forefront. So she just starts walking toward them, like fully accepting and thinking like, he's bringing me to the woods to kill me. Like that tracks.
That's what's happening.
Okay.
Yep.
But he doesn't. He actually turns her around toward a building. So they enter the building, which ends up being where the man's apartment is. She can see the carpet on the floor, which is mostly green with some yellow and red specks. She counts each step up the stairs that they take to his apartment. Ends up being 19 steps. Then they take a quick left turn, then a quick right turn. And she realizes that must be where we're like in his apartment. And then she can see that he opens the door with his left hand. So now she's clocking the car, where they've gone, how long they've driven, how many steps up to the apartment, and that he's predominantly left-handed. Like, what?
Amazing.
Amazing.
So amazing.
Amazing recall.
Yeah, it is.
They enter the apartment and Lisa is hit by the overwhelming smell of fresh paint. She noted it seemed like a very clean apartment. He orders her to undress again. She had gotten some clothes on at this point.
He could obviously get her out, like
walk
her
through
out.
A right. place.
Right. Exactly. Even though there's really not going to be anybody around at 3 a.m, but whatever. He puts her in the shower. He takes her blindfold off, but tells her to like keep her eyes closed. Don't look at him. But she gets a quick peek and she sees he has short brown hair. And this is where Lisa gets a little confused because then he washes her. Okay. And the way that he washes her is almost, even what he says later is almost like romantic. Like they're in a relationship. Like he's his girlfriend.
This is like those guys you go to the brothels, the Nevada brothels. and like romance the sex workers. Okay. It's like, stop it. Like, who, like, why do you think that that's what's going on here? This is a business transaction, right?
Yeah,
like
seriously.
What he's doing to this girl is like, you can't make up for the fact that you just abducted someone. Like, seriously. You can't just try to be, do like a loving.
No.
Massage.
Just, no, that's bathtub, not what no. we're doing here.
No.
Like,
no.
You didn't ask me on a date. You know what I mean? Like, you took me.
You've already failed, bro. You already failed.
Well, then, and then immediately puts the blindfold back on, throws her onto the floor and rapes her naked on the bathroom floor. In my mind, it's like, is he at war with himself? Is he like fighting his urges? Or is he just so unhinged that he literally like goes from one thought to the next? Like, I'm taking her, I'm angry, I want her, but then no, I'm mad, but then I'm going to rape her. And then like, what the fuck?
Yeah. It's like, he's acting out like all levels of his fantasies. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at some point, Lisa asks him, like, why are you doing this to me? He tells her to get back at women.
Cool.
To get back at women.
Yep. Okay. All the women. Yeah.
All of them. Every single one of us.
Okay. Oh, my God.
So he puts ligatures back around her arms and legs and he puts her in a bed. And Quinny's, guess what fucking kind of bed it is?
No.
A water bed?
It's a fucking
No. No, no.
Downs in this guy, Bob and Joe.
Literally, how dare you? How dare you?
It was a thing. It used to be a thing.
I know, but no.
No.
But no.
Yeah, though. Waterbeds are for creepos, man.
For real.
My God. Okay. As if she hasn't been through enough, he puts her on the waterbed now. He climbs over her. He drags the gun across her stomach, like kind of just a reminder that he has it. He hasn't used it. Like, he hasn't done anything with it, but just make sure you know I'm in charge here. Then he asks her her name and she lies and she says it's Carol. So she's lied about her age and she's lied about her name. Both very smart. And then he asks her to describe the girls in her high school and what their bodies look like when they change her gym class.
Oh,
God.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Sick.
Oh my God.
But she wants to get on his good side. So she just makes shit up just to keep him calm and play along. So again, like, he's on and off raping her. He's slapping her, punching her, talking, I guess, and then raping her again, you know. Then after that, he orders her to go to sleep. Oh, okay.
Oh yeah. Let me get right on that. Yeah,
let me go. I'll sleep now. It's cool. They're in the bed together. Like, they're asleep. They're in the bed next to each other.
It's like Jamie Kloss.
Exactly.
Yeah, it is Jamie Kloss vibes.
He's laying there like snoring and she's lying there away because first of all, she doesn't know if it's like a fake snore or not. Like, is he actually asleep?
Yeah. There's no reason to believe that he's really even out.
So this entire fucking time, Lisa's basically calm, has not cried yet. Like, she did scream when he first took her off the bike. Other than that, like, she's pretty much keeping it together, which is insane.
Incredible.
Incredible. Her survival instincts are obviously completely taking over.
Yeah.
And she's realizing, and she's kind of like figuring him out, her abductor. And she realizes he kind of has like a childlike mind a little bit, but his mood is very quick to fluctuate. Sometimes he's calm. Sometimes he's trying to be romantic or washing her in the fucking shower. And then sometimes he's flying into a fit of rage over seemingly nothing. She's dealt with this before, right? She's dealt with abuse. And she knows that if you fight back, if you yell, if you, resist,
it's only going to make it worse.
Makes it worse. So she does all she can to try to keep him calm. She did everything he says. But at the same time, she's also kind of lying to him and trying to make up some stories to humanize herself, make him maybe be a little sympathetic to her, anything. So one of the big stories that she tells him is that she has a very sick father and that she is his only caregiver, and to try to persuade him to let her go. Like, she even like tries to use the phone once and he's like, what are you doing? And she's like, I just want to make sure my dad's okay and let him know that I'm fine and it's all okay. And just, I'm the only one he has. But I think it's so incredibly smart. Not only just the fact that she's lying and trying to humanize herself, but that she chooses a sick father and not a sick mother
or grandmother. The more obvious choice.
Exactly.
Yes.
But he is not going to be sympathetic to a woman.
He's trying to get back at women.
Exactly.
So she makes, so smart.
Incredible. people are aware that she's missing. They have found her abandoned bicycle at the church. Her purse and belongings and a bunch of jelly donuts are on the ground. Okay. They're strewn all over. Like the jelly donuts.
Yeah. I know. You know, I also have a feeling. I know someone who went through childhood abuse and worked at a bakery when they were like a teen. And it was a great opportunity for them to eat food.
Yeah.
Like truly. Like just to have food around that no one is keeping from you or regulating. Or whatever.
Yep. I mean, like maybe not for everybody, but seemingly baked goods are like a standard comfort food.
Definitely. And you know we're talking we're talking about motherfucking Krispy Kreme here. Delicious. Like this is no joke.
So it
is
so good.
Amazing.
But when she doesn't come home, I don't know the time. I don't know how long it took, but the grandmother does eventually call the police and say, hey, I think my granddaughter is not home. Like, I don't know what happened, whatever. But she's not like hysterical, shocker. But Lisa actually hears about this while she's at the apartment in captivity. Throughout the rapes and the showers and the sleeping in the waterbed or whatever, the next morning or day, whatever however you look at it, they're up and about. And this abductor would actually take her into the living room and sit her on the couch while he goes to make her a sandwich.
He is all over the place, man.
Like, oh, sit here, honey, and I'll make you a sandwich. Like, yeah, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's 17,000 different mood swings.
Like, okay, like at least he's feeding her. That's good. But like, also, no, thank you.
It's just strange.
So she's still blindfolded, but she's in the living room and she can hear Airwolf on the TV. And it's interrupted by a news bulletin stating that a 17-year-old named Lisa Rhodes has been reported missing. Okay, well, shit. First of all,
I'm supposed to be Carol.
Supposed to be Carol. I'm supposed to be 19. Also, if you recall at the beginning of the episode, I said her name is Lisa McVeigh. Rhodes is the last name of her fucking grandmother's boyfriend. And while she was living with them, they would make her use his last name, along with calling him dad, along with him repeatedly molesting her at gunpoint. The level of heinous audacity there is just, I don't have enough years of my life to unpack. But at this point, when she hears the news bulletin, that is when it becomes really real for her. And that is when she breaks down and starts crying and screaming. Like she breaks. He flies into a fit of rage at this and he puts a gun to her head again and says, if you scream one more time, I will be forced to put a bullet in your head. Stop crying. But she even notices during her hysterics, she notices he says forced. Not, I'm going to put a bullet in your head. I want to put a bullet in your head. I will be forced to.
I will have to.
I will have to. You will make me do this. So she's like, well, maybe he doesn't really want to kill me. Like maybe not as priority or, you know, in his, like he's obviously at war with it, but he takes her back to the bedroom with the fucking waterbed. If he continues to rape her on and off again, she loses count. It happens so many times. During one of the rapes, he literally takes her tied up hands and puts them on his face. Ew. 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 But also, ew. You're a fucking idiot because now she knows what you look like. Even if she hasn't seen your face, she can feel that he has a small, neat mustache. He has some pock marks on his skin. He has kind of like a snub nose, I guess, and small ears. And he's like not overweight. He's like, you know, pretty average.
Sounds like, a lot of them share a lot of the same traits, these pricks. Okay. You know what I mean?
This might sound really stupid, though, too, but I also have to give her credit for that, too, though, because I can't guarantee that I would be able to identify that shit.
Yes.
Like, I wouldn't be able to.
No.
I mean, you could tell if somebody had bigger, small hair or something. Ears. Yeah. Sure.
I can feel a mustache. Yeah,
but that's really descriptive. Yeah. Like, that's for not looking dead at him. That's really descriptive.
Actively raped, dude.
Right.
So whatever, he's done raping her and now he's chatting again. We're seeing this weird fucking pattern he's going through. And he tells Lisa that he just went through a really bad breakup. He's really been through it.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
That's why he's trying to get back at all the women. Lisa's like just still trying to do whatever she can to calm him down and appease him. And she's like, you know, I know we didn't meet under the best circumstances, but like maybe I could be your girlfriend and I'll take care of you. Anything to calm him down and keep her alive longer.
Right. Right. So smart.
So after another rape, Lisa asks him to let her use the bathroom. She doesn't want to pee all over his waterbed because like he's obviously clean and he's not going to want all that, you know. He does bring her to the bathroom, but he goes into the bathroom with her and she tells him, you know what, I can't go with you just standing there. Can you just like leave me alone in the bathroom, please? And he does. He leaves her there. So she's alone in the bathroom. She's alone for the very first time since she's been there. And this is when she starts touching absolutely everything in the bathroom, leaving her fingerprints everywhere. She wanted to the police to know that she was there. So smart.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Like everywhere you go, just like touch everything. Like just put your fingerprints everywhere. Just leave
everything. Can you imagine how pissed people would get, like their shiny glass door in their house? You're just like, hang on, let me touch all this.
Just hold on a second. Oh, so later on in the early hours of the next morning, he randomly gives her another woman's shirt and tells her to get dressed. At this point, he's like pacing around the apartment and he's kind of talking to himself, like, what am I going to do with her? She tells him again, like, it's okay. I can be your secret girlfriend. Like, no one needs to know, like, the weird circumstances, how we met. And he starts getting angry and he starts yelling, I can't keep her around here. So like, I think he secretly, or maybe not so secretly, did maybe want that to be a thing, trying to be romantic sometimes. And he wants a girlfriend. That's why he's like sad about the breakup. It's why he's making her a fucking sandwich. But he also knows like he can't just keep the 17-year-old girl that he fucking stole off the street, you know?
Right.
So then he asks Lisa where she lives. And he says, I'm going to take you home. And at first she doesn't believe it because why would she? She's like, nope, he's going to kill me. But she's like, well, maybe he believes my sick father story. Like maybe he feels sorry for me. Like maybe he really will take me home. But she doesn't tell him her actual address. Again, very smart. But she does tell him like the Hillsborough area, just to drop her off at Hillsborough in Rome. So they do get back into his car. And on the way there, he stops at a bank to go to the ATM. She's still blindfolded in the car, but she can see, again, underneath her blindfold, his white sneakers and jeans, and he's wearing a white t-shirt. And she's been left in the car by herself while he goes to the ATM. She doesn't try to get away, even though like you would seem like a prime time to try to escape. She doesn't, because she thinks like maybe this is a test. She doesn't know if he's actually going to drop her off or not. Besides, so
she's got to act at least like she means it.
Right.
For the meantime, it's not the right time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's not going to be in there for an hour. She doesn't have enough time to outrun him, and she could just get caught again. He could really kill her that time. So he gets back in the car. They drive around some more. They get to Hillsborough in Rome, but he keeps driving. He starts getting angry again right as they pass. Like he's seemingly, you know, fine-ish up until this point. Now he's angry and yelling, you're lying to me. Like, what are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. She's like not, she hasn't done anything. She's just sitting in the car with this
fucker. She's like, I've been abducted. Hi, thank you. Like, I've been
raped and tortured and kidnapped.
Like, are you kidding me?
No, she goes, no, it's okay. Just make a U-turn up here and drop me off. Totally calm. Doesn't want to agitate him anymore. He fucking listens, dude. He makes a U-turn.
Okay? Unbelievable.
He just keeps driving around though, and she sees like a sign for a Howard Johnson and Highway 275. Okay. So she makes note of that as well. He then stops at a gas station, pulls in the back of it, and he says, if you try to yell, I will kill the clerk of this gas station and then come back and kill you. Mind you, it is 4:30 in the morning.
No one's there.
No one's there. No one's around. So he pulls in the back and he then tells her he's sorry.
I'm telling you, he's going through all these different scenarios in his head.
He tells her, tell your father he's the reason why I didn't kill you. Then he says, give me 5 minutes and then you can take the blindfold off. She's just frozen. Okay. Just what? But she does eventually, she's out of the car. She finally takes off her blindfold and she's in front of this like beautiful oak tree. And that's when she thinks, okay, I'm going to have a new life and it will be better. It's going to be okay. So she's running through the streets to get home. And every time a car goes by, she's terrified that it's him coming back to get her, but he doesn't. She makes it home. And like that normally would be the best part of the story, right?
Right.
Yep. No, she's pounding on the door and the grandmother's boyfriend opens it up. Okay. She's like, I'm home. I'll fly. I can't. He grabs her by the hair and throws her to the ground in the house. He then beats her and interrogates her and where she's been for about 5 hours. He's beating her and asking, where have you been? Why are you cheating on me?
And she's saying, I was abducted.
She's like, I was literally fucking kidnapped and raped and beaten. Like I was kidnapped. And he's like, why are you cheating on me?
Ugh.
What? What?
Jesus. What a sick, sick son of a bitch.
The grandmother's there.
Just like baking cookies in the kitchen.
I know. You do kind of imagine. She's just like, oh, better pull these brownies out. No,
I'm imagining her sitting on the kitchen table smoking a cigarette, just reading the newspaper. Just like doing fucking
business
nothing.
As usual, I guess. Gross.
So finally, after five more hours of abuse, okay, the grandmother finally decides, oh, I guess I'll call the police. But what does she do? She doesn't say, hey, there's a terrible abductor out there stealing girls. Yeah, don't worry about the missing girl. She's home. She's making up some shit story about being kidnapped.
Well, are there any Carly? Come on. Okay. First of all, you said this was a survivor story.
I know.
It better be a survivor story. There better be some more nice people in it. Because right now, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, right now, it ain't looking so hot.
Unfortunately, good.
We still got to muck through some shit to get to the good stuff. There's still some more shit.
All right.
The grandmother is literally telling the police, nah, it's good. She's cool. And she's just lying. And the police were like, you know what, though? We still got to do an investigation.
We still have to do our job.
You know, I wish that this would just happen more often, you know?
At least they should investigate. And Lisa's like, if it weren't for them investigating, like, I think I would have killed myself after that. I wanted to live during the abduction, but after like not being believed and being beaten when I got home, like, no.
They're potentially like the only hero she really like has right now, really, if you put it into perspective.
Like, imagine how it could have been if they, first of all, just in Lisa's case, like just for Lisa's life, if they didn't push it and they're like, oh, she's a runaway, she's home now, it's fine. They're like, you got to bring Lisa in so we can talk to her about it. Okay. Can you bring her in, please?
Real quick. Take the brownies out. Let them cool.
Can you just leave the brownies in the window?
Leave the brownies. No, we don't leave them in the window.
Well, you can leave it in the window, but don't leave it unlocked.
Yeah. No,
lock the window.
Don't leave in the window.
The pies or the brownies in the window.
Pulling a pie. Right.
Leave anything in the window. No. Don't leave anything in the window.
Don't ever leave the house ever.
Ever for any reason.
So Lisa gets down to the police station. They have a female detective talking to her, which under the circumstances, you would think that's actually like a good idea. That's a good idea. Yeah, no. So she's telling her story to the detective and she's telling all of the details, the incredible
amount of
amazing
details
that she has been able to find, able to remember and then recount to her. You know what I mean? Like, I would be a sobbing mess in the corner or mute. You know what I mean?
Yep.
She is so calm while telling the detective all of this that the detective thinks that she's lying. So she asks her to go over all of the heinous details over again and again and again and again. Like, it is bad enough that she is having to recount all of this trauma, but to make her go over it numerous times. She is 17 years old. Lisa has had enough. She says, no, bring in somebody more intelligent.
Have we not all felt way?
Can I get that on a fucking t-shirt? Like, what the fuck?
Everywhere she turns, no one is helping her. Every single place. She's been abandoned by the system, being in that house for so long.
So she's like, no, bring someone more intelligent, which is like just the badassery of that is just insane. Amazing. I love it so fucking much. So they do bring someone else in. They bring in Sergeant Larry Pinkerton. He comes in, he listens to Lisa's story, which again, she has to recount the whole fucking story again. So.
Right. Of course.
It sucks, but whatever. She tells him everything that she remembers. And Pinkerton is actually in charge of sexual crimes, their sexual crimes unit. He leaves the room and she overhears him tell one of the female detectives, I believe her, call the FBI.
Thank you, Larry.
Okay. Thank you.
Larry. You rock, Larry.
Larry is a fucking jam.
Larry's somebody. The jam. Larry is the fucking jam and ham and spam.
Okay, the FBI is getting involved. Thank God. But a few days after returning home from her abduction, Lisa hears another news bulletin, and it's a report about a murder victim in her area. They say another dead body has been found. This would make 8 women in total found murdered in the area since that spring, just in that area of Tampa alone.
And there's no way that these quote unquote grandparents. I'm not even gonna call them a grandma, and you know what I mean? Because they're not really family to anyone.
No, not at all.
But there's no way that they're not hearing about that too. Absolutely. Because right, like it's going on in the area, it's on the news, women are showing up dead, and then she says somebody came after me, and they just don't, they just act like she's a liar.
Like what goes through your fucking brain on a daily basis? Like who are you?
Bring in someone more intelligent, please.
Someone more intelligent, please. So Lisa hears this news report and she is convinced that her kidnapper is the man that's killing these women. So she calls up Larry. She says, come get me. There's more I need to tell you. Fucking Larry. Okay.
Larry rolls up.
He rolls up, takes her down to the station.
Love Larry.
Fucking love Larry so much.
Fucking Larry.
In the Lifetime movie. And granted, I get it's a Lifetime fucking movie. But the girl who plays Lisa and the guy who plays Larry, just they're great. So great.
That's
so
good.
The girl is Katie Douglas. I've never seen her before, but she's beautiful and she has that perfect like innocent face but like smart eyes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. She was so good. David James Elliott, I've seen him before. Where have I seen him? I don't know, but I love him. Oh, he's in JAG. He's the lead guy in JAG.
Yes,
he does Larry so well that it makes me just love Little Hims, because Little Hims is the only fucking one taking care of Lisa. Like,
yes, yeah, the only one listening to her.
Okay. Yes. And the fact that he's like an older dude and she's 17 and been through what she's been through, the fact that she can even trust a man is just amazing. So she goes on the station, she recounts her experience again to the police. And this time Larry's like, you know, Lisa, do you want to be hypnotized? Like maybe this will help you jog some memories that you're not remembering, like as much as she's already remembered.
Because the trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it, you know, people, they do it a lot, but because she's not 18, she needs permission.
Not from Grandma Brownie.
Nope. Not from grandma. Her literal non-blood related relative, grandma's boyfriend.
I'm just gonna say it's Florida. I'm just gonna chalk it up to Florida.
Florida listeners, I'm sorry.
And Tampa is a high crime area too. It's a really high crime. Really high crime.
Larry calls place up and grandmother's boyfriend, Morris or whoever the fuck, answers and he refuses to grant her permission to get hypnotized.
Yeah, because he knows that that's going to cause her to say other shit that he doesn't want to say.
Backfired because she's like, okay, well, actually, he's been abusing me for years.
Boom. Sorry. Guess we know now.
That's what I was just going to say is, does she tell Larry? Like, all she needs to do is tell Larry.
He immediately gets arrested.
Oh my God.
Larry is clean in house right now.
Larry's like, fuck around and bust.
Larry,
dude. Okay.
Larry is the fucking icing on the cake of this story, man. This is great.
So now that one of her abusers is in handcuffs, okay, at least there's one. Lisa wants to make sure that the same thing is going to happen to her fucking abductor. Like, she's not done. She's not getting sent back home to her grandmother. Thank God for that. She didn't get arrested, though.
Grams
didn't get arrested. So she's not going home to grandma's house. She does get placed into a center for runaway teens, which like on paper doesn't sound great per se, but it is like a safe place for her to be. And it's also to ensure that like if for whatever reason, like the grandma's boyfriend gets out, like he can't find her there, you know, he can't go there.
And she's probably relieved as hell, quite frankly.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
To be out of
there. I would be. Yeah.
So while she's there, Larry brings her a bunch of photos for her to look at of potential kidnappers. Now, granted, she hasn't actually seen his face. She successfully identifies a man in the lineup. The moment she sees him, she's like, that's the face I felt. I'm 110% sure. They have that information. They have all the previous information that she's recounted to them, right? Granted, she's still not hypnotized. So who knows what she could have remembered? And I'm still pissed about that particular fact, but it ends up being okay. So they retrace the route that Lisa believed that they took in the car, and they end up finding the ATM that he used. Now, probably not cameras like on the ATM. It's only 1984. So I'm assuming there probably weren't cameras there. And if they were, they probably weren't great, but at least they have it. So they also realize she said, oh, she saw the word Magnum on the dashboard of the car. And in 1984, only car that had the word Magnum on it was a Dodge Magnum.
Wow.
And she knows that it's maroon. So they're looking for red or maroon Dodge Magnums in the Florida vehicle registration database.
Wow.
Okay. And they locate a man's name, Robert Joseph Long. They were also able to pull from the ATM transaction.
So it's now cross-referenced, correct?
Cross-referenced. All all because of Lisa. And like, granted, like they're doing police work, good for them, but like it is because of Lisa.
It's because of Lisa.
So once they find out who he was, they start monitoring his comings and goings. They see him, like they find him like at his apartment. They see him stuffing things into a big green trash bin outside his home.
Oh, not shady at all.
Draining the waterbed, Quinnies.
What's he gonna sleep on?
First of all, like he's planning to leave. Just the words draining the waterbed make me want to puke up everything I've ever eaten.
So seriously. I wonder if this is like a key with the waterbed. You could roll the waterbed plastic bins or whatever the hell they are up and throw them away. Whereas a mattress, if you get evidence on a mattress, you can't really dispose of a mattress.
And one of the very first, yes, and one of the very first, you're so right, Quinny. And one of the very first feelings I got as soon as Quinny started the story, she was not his first victim. That was not his first victim.
No.
Maybe these creeps are just like, oh, that's it's easier to get rid of a waterbed.
It's easy to get rid of. And then in Maddie Clifton's case, it's easy to hide a body under.
Yep. And you're right. You can just, you could potentially just clean DNA right off of it where you can't do that at on a bed.
You can like just you could throw take, it away. You could just dispose of it. You can't, you're not going to take the mattress out.
Right.
You're just going to have to hide the whatever thing.
But you could even wipe it down. Well, it's like a solid, it's like one plastic. Solid giant plastic bag, basically.
Right. Like nylon or some shit, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like,
so you could potentially take cleaner and just wipe the shit down. Yep. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
No more water beds. All right, guys.
God,
we're
I'm
done.
So
Leave
creeped
them in
out.
The 80s. Yeah. Ugh.
So they do finally arrest him outside of a movie theater. And this was 12 days after he had abducted Lisa. So who the fuck is Robert Joseph, or Bobby Joe, as he would be called? Who is this dude? So Lisa's abductor would turn out to be a serial killer and rapist.
Oh.
Bobby Joe Long. Okay. Before he had kidnapped Lisa, he had already murdered 8 women. The 8 women that she had heard about in the Tampa area.
So that was all him.
That was all him. And after releasing Lisa in the 12 days it took to catch him, he had also killed 2 more women. That is very quick. That is
very quick. It seems like he knew that she got away and they're coming.
In addition to the 8 murders, well now 10 murders and the 1 abduction, he would also commit more than 50 rapes, 50 rapes.
Wow. That's like D'Angelo level.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I didn't want to get hugely into him because like we've already been through the serial killers. So he was an unemployed x-ray technician. The fact that he was an x-ray technician creeps me the fuck out.
Yeah, because he had to get up close and personal with
You have to be in the room in the gown with him.
Yeah. God.
Yeah.
So he was like already fulfilling his perversions just within his job. Oh my God.
He was a 10th grade dropout from West Virginia, and he had been born with a genetic disorder that was characterized by an extra chromosome, and it led him to grow breasts at puberty.
Whoa.
This is really
No wonder he hates women
exactly.
so much.
This is a cruel joke of the universe.
No.
Oh my God.
It gets better as in it gets worse. Okay.
Okay. So now we have, just hold on 1 second. Let me get this straight. So we have a 10th grade dropout from West Virginia with titties. Is that where we're at right now?
Who is an unemployed x-ray technician. Okay, who kills multiple women. You know, if anyone has a genetic disorder, like, we're not making fun of you, but like,
of course not. It's just this guy. We're getting fun of this
serial killer.
This serial rapist.
Serial rapist douchebag. Yeah. So, oh Quinny, my God.
Quinny, since we're, it gets worse.
Oh my God.
So during the time.
I just didn't know that.
I'm glad I could give you some info that you did not found out yet.
Oh okay.
I'm just bringing in the research, Quinn. Just bringing in the facts.
Oh, wow. I don't think we've ever lost it that hard before. No. I don't think we ever have.
Just, it's such a twist. Such a twist. Oh, my God.
Really is. It really is. So, West Virginia, 10th grade. Got it.
During this time of his life, he was sharing a bed with his barmaid. Okay, so during the time of his life, he would be sharing a bed with his mother in their one-bedroom apartment. And he also would witness, like, the numerous dudes that she would bring home. So,
I mean,
they're sharing a bed. So, like, where is he during this? So, he would end up getting married a little bit later in life to his high school sweetheart. He actually met her when he was, like, 13. Everything was allegedly fine until he had a motorcycle accident and suffered brain damage. And according to his now ex-wife, this is when and, like, he completely changed.
If it was a bad motorcycle accident, you, like, that can do serious damage for sure.
Absolutely. But he's already not had a great start.
You are not kidding.
I don't know the level, you know what I mean? But this is when he starts being, like, angry all the time. He starts becoming physically abusive. He starts masturbating multiple times a day, plus having sex with his wife multiple times a day, and it's still not enough. So they end up getting divorced. Okay. She would end up getting physically abused by him one day, and the neighbors would hear, like, things going on, and the police came. She gets questioned, and when they ask her if she wants to press charges, she says no. And the police officer was like, I will give you a week to file for divorce from him and move out, or I will press charges myself. And so she does. She gets an attorney, she files for divorce, and she leaves him. But that's one bad breakup of his that didn't go over well with him. And then he gets a new girlfriend, and he finds out soon after that his new girlfriend is seeing another man. And this also does not go over well with Long. And his mother, Luella, remembers the day her son called her and said, I can't find any decent girls in the world. 2 months after that phone call is when the bodies start piling up. So he first began his crime spree in the early 1980s, and he would actually mostly use the classified ads to find victims.
What?
So this is like Craigslist.
It is. So after raping dozens of women, Long would start killing them in 1984. And then in November of 1984 is when he kidnapped Lisa, and then he lets her go and he kills two more. Even though, like, they obviously have all the paper trail, you know, they have Lisa's account, they have the car. What tied him to the murders?
Other murders? Yeah.
The FBI lab found the same red carpet fibers on Lisa's clothes, as well as all of the murder victims. And Lisa even says, like, if it weren't for me, he would not have been caught.
She's totally right.
She's absolutely right.
100%.
She's then, like, begging the detectives to let her see the photos of the other women. She, like, just wants to see. And she says it was awful, but she just needed to see them. And at that point is when, like, the seed plants in her head. Like, she's like, I think I want to be a cop one day. Like, I don't want this to happen to anybody else.
So it's such a, what an origin story. What,
exactly.
You know, like, can you imagine, like, you're at the police academy and they're like, what makes you want to be a cop? And you're like, oh, well, you know, my dad was a cop and, you know, it seemed like a good job. I feel like I'd be good at it. And then Lisa walks in and is like, let me tell you what happened to me.
Exactly. Officers would arrest Long on November 16th, 1984 for the kidnapping and sexual assault of Lisa McVeigh.
What a wonderful day that had to be.
What a day. Mm-hmm. Long has no problem confessing to everything, including the 10 murders. And on September 23rd, 1985, he would plead guilty to his crimes against Lisa, as well as 8 counts of first degree murder, 8 counts of kidnapping, and 7 counts of sexual battery. Long would be sentenced to, this is astounding. He would be sentenced to 26 life sentences without the possibility of parole, 24 concurrent and 2 to run consecutively, and 7 life sentences with the possibility of parole after 25 years, and 1 death sentence for the murder of Michelle Sims, who was a 22-year-old former beauty pageant contestant from California who was working as a receptionist at a massage parlor in Florida at the time that she was murdered.
Wow.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
Long spent 34 years on death row. In May of 2019, he was executed by lethal injection in the state of Florida, and Lisa attended the execution. She wanted to be the first person he saw. She sat in the front row and she wore a handmade t-shirt that read Long ... overdue. As Lisa aged out of the Center for Runaway Teens, this is, you know, obviously back in time a little bit, Lisa had asked if she had any other relatives that she could live with. The authorities would find her mother in a legitimate crack house. And when they asked her about Lisa, she told them, Lisa's on her own. Just hear me out for a second. I understand that the mother is suffering from substance abuse. I totally understand. It's a hard thing. It's an addiction. It's a disease. Okay. This isn't just her being too, you know, high on crack to even like care about what her daughter's doing.
No, she just doesn't give a shit.
She doesn't care. Give a shit, regardless if she were sober or high or whatever. You know what I mean? Like that just, so Lisa does go to live with her aunt Carol and her uncle Charlie. I don't know why she didn't get to go with them like before this, but luckily they were there for her. Now she got to go live with them, and she says like they were the only people who ever showed her love. And Lisa said after that there was no holding me back. That's all she needed and wanted. Like that's all she needed and wanted. She starts working odd jobs until 1994, when she begins working for the Hillsborough County Parks and Recreation Department. While she's there, there's a break-in, and she reports the break-in at the office. And the deputy who came to the scene said, "You've got the attitude to be a cop. You ever thought about that?"
And she's like, "Actually,
I basically am one. I caught a serial killer. Thank you.
I already caught one. You ever catch one?"
So she said, like, "I was really interested, but she had a daughter who was 7 years old at the time. And she had vowed that if she ever has kids, she would never let them down. And she didn't want to risk getting shot and killed and not coming home to her daughter." So in 1999, she was transferred to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office as a dispatcher, and she would become a reserve deputy. And in 2004, she made the decision and she put herself through the police academy and was deputized. She did it. She did the whole fucking thing. She works in the same department that found and arrested her captor, specializing in sex crimes and working to protect children. And as if that wasn't great enough, she also works as a middle school resource officer, and she uses her story to teach students like how to handle potentially dangerous situations. She says she's like the mama bear. All her kids know, and everybody knows, like, don't mess with her kids, like any of them. If she sees like a student who's like down in the dumps or like stressed out about or having something like a bad day, she'll tell them a story about a girl whose family abandoned her and who was kidnapped and raped. And she says, "I say, do you think she lost her way? No. She became a police officer and you're looking right at her."
Oh my goodness.
That is the story of Lisa McVeigh, who now goes by Lisa Nolan because she's married, and like hero extraordinaire. I don't even have any more final thoughts, because I the only thought I have is that she is the most amazing person, you know, her and Mary Vincent, like that's it.
Listen to Straight Up Evil.